Hi there, I'm Dan McGowan. I'm a clean comedian with a passion for raising the bar on clean comedy. This podcast is all about clean comedy, and I'll be interviewing clean comedians and entertainers, and we'll find out what makes them tick.
Or what ticks them off.
So if you want to learn more about clean comedy, stick around, because this is Just Pure Laughs. Well, my guest today is comedian Gordon Douglas. We're going to find out all about his life. Let me just give you a little intro to Gordon, because Gordon's had an amazing career. In his spare time, he actually is still president of the Therapeutic Construction and Design Company. They make custom equipment for folks with disabilities. And in honor of his hero, Bob Hope, Gordon started Operation Belly Laughs, sending comedy DVDs to the troops. That's so cool. He's been on the Mike Huckabee Show twice this last year and recently released his Dry Bar Comedy Special. He was also a finalist in the, as a Christian Comedian of the Year for 2023. That's for the Red Letter Awards in Nashville. And so it's an honor to have you here, Gordon, and I really appreciate you taking the time on this last day of 2024 to talk with me. Gordon, hello.
Great to be with you, Dan. It's a thrill to always to share some comedy, some love, and some joy. And it's rare that comedians get to work together, so this is doubly fun.
Well, and I love in this age we're doing this, because in the old days, we would have had to do jokes over, like, smoke signals. But now we can do it,
exactly.
You know, yeah, we can do it, like, over the net, over the internet, as they call it. Gordon, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. I'm overwhelmed with all that you've done over these past many years as a comedian, working clean and also obviously as a Christian and even as a pastor. And so you've got a lot going on in your life that is very exciting, and it encourages people. I saw one of your Huckabee sets. I didn't see both of them, and it was just great. And your Dry Bar, of course, was a lot of fun. So let me ask you some stuff. Have you always been a funny guy, Gordon? Is that how you've always been?
I would say since junior high school, I moved from right outside South Philly to classic South Philly, where they made the Rocky movies, out into the suburbs, a journey of only 17 miles, but it was a world apart. But as a very quiet, shy kid that didn't fit in a new school, it was comedy that got me through. And in those days, they didn't call me funny. It was weird, odd, strange. But trying to make people laugh in the playground or in the class, it was something that it gave me an identity. And I liked the fact that when I could say or do something, people would laugh. I like that feeling. And sometimes when you get that feeling, you go overboard. You don't know where to draw the line. But so that was always part of what I wanted. And maybe sometimes too much because of that lack of self-esteem. I kind of maybe overcompensated at a time. But it did become a driving force for me through high school and college age.
Now, let me ask you, I know for myself, there were times, probably more than I want to even admit or remember, that I got in trouble for being the funny kid. You know, did that ever happen to you?
Oh, yes. I had my special seat next to the principal or the teacher in many a classroom.
That's great. That's great. And so was your family funny? Was there stuff going on there that kind of led you down this funny path?
No, I would say probably just the opposite. A lot of comedy is birthed in tragedy, as we know from studying some of the greats. I grew up in the Ed Sullivan era, and you know, whether it's Jonathan Winters or Carol Burnett or even the Dick Van Dykes, if you look at a lot of their history, you know, they came out of some very abusive backgrounds. Now, I wouldn't say mine was abusive, but my dad was a Korean veteran and worked in a MASH unit. So when he came home from the war, my mom said he was never quite the same. We know now of PTSD and stuff, but to work in a MASH unit in a war kind of changed him. So he was a very strict family. I don't remember a lot of laughter growing up.
So really, if there was any laughter, it sounds like it came from you in your home.
Yeah, I was the giggly, weird kid and always tried to find that silver lining to the clouds. I wasn't always a happy kid either, but I tried to find that way to make people laugh and bring some joy out of it. And some of it was just because I had that dark cloud myself. I struggled with depression, as many comedians do.
Hmm. Yeah. So what is it that led you to follow this as a career path? I mean, how did you get started in that?
Yeah, well, to condense out, it was 1977. My first show was 1977.
That's a long time ago, Gordon. That's,
yeah, you know, I know. I spoke at a college recently, and I told them my very first show was right outside Philadelphia with a pretty big rock and roll group called Bill Haley and the Comets.
Oh, come on. Really?
Philly, and it, yeah, these college kids looked at me like Amish at Circuit City, to quote one of our favorite comedians. It was like, what? They had no clue. I said, oh, come on. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, rocking. And they said, oh, happy days.
Oh, gosh.
No. I said, 30 years before happy days, there was Bill Haley and the Comets. What in the beginning? Yeah. So, yeah, Bill Haley grew up in my hometown of Chester, Pennsylvania. And he was having an anniversary show and a memorial show. And I had met one of the local performers that had made it big, a singer by the name of Julie DeJohn. And she and her sister had a couple big hits in the 50s and 60s. And then she went on to become a singer-comedian. She sang some commercial jingles that you would be familiar with if you heard them, and then had the chance to open for a guy named Frank Sinatra. And
you opened for Frank Sinatra?
No, Julie.
Oh, she did. Okay.
And she ended up on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show a number of times, and locally here in Philadelphia, the Mike Douglas Show was filmed right here in Philadelphia. She was on dozens and dozens of times. Well, long story short is her son ended up on my Little League team. I was a 20-year-old coaching Little League.
Oh, wow.
And, she showed up one day in her big purple Lincoln Continental. And I said, I know who that is. I saw her on TV last week. And I look at to hear her son is on my team. I went over to introduce myself. And I said, you know, people say I'm kind of funny. And how do you get into this show business thing? And she was kind enough to talk to me and asked me to give her a tape of my act, which I had no act. I just had jokes I told. I said, typically, I was at parties telling jokes when everyone else was making out. I had to know.
Yeah, but were they listening to you if they were busy making out?
No. That's a tough crowd.
That's right.
I was always the guy with no date, but I'd go around trying to make people laugh. That's great. I went out, literally, Dan, I went to Circuit City and I bought myself a Radio Shack cassette player.
Oh, wow.
And I sat in the basement and told every funny story I could think of about the locker room, about the coach, about my first dance, about stuff, all these stories I used to tell in the back of the bus or at the cafeteria table. And I gave it to her. She called me the next day and I went over her house and she handed me my cassette and said, Gordon, this is really cute. And I smiled real big thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. And she said, Gordon, people don't pay for cute.
Oh, wow.
She said, and I was stunned. And she said, but you have a gift. I can hear it. You take this 1 hour cassette and get me 6 good minutes out of it. Here's what you need to do. You need to hit a punchline every 15 to 20 seconds. You need to segue from one joke. You come watch my show tonight and watch what I do. And she worked with me for the next 6 months and said, when you get 10 good minutes, I'll let you open for me.
Wow.
And 6 months later, she was doing a show with Bill Haley and the Comets and said, I think you're ready. You're going to be on next week. And I did a show with her. And the next 2 years, I toured with her and I met people like Joey Bishop and Danny Thomas and got on some shows. And
wow.
And those were the days before comedy clubs. It was theaters. It was dinner clubs. It was classy joints with velvet curtains and orchestras in the back. And oh my goodness, it was just such a different world at the end of an era of show business. I was so fortunate to be a part of that.
I love how what you're describing is really what I grew up with. Watch my parents were nightclub entertainers. And so I would occasionally see them, you know, I'd be sitting on some, you know, waitress's lap while they're up on the stage performing or something, drinking a Shirley Temple, you know. But
exactly.
What you're describing is this era. It's not just that the era is gone, you know, that we don't have that era because, like you said, it was before comedy clubs and all that. But even comedy I'm sure you've seen changes in comedy over the past several years or decades or whatever. I mean, well, anything big that you've seen that has really changed with comedy?
Yeah, well, obviously the whole world has changed, but the need to laugh has not. But from the comedy standpoint, when I was in high school, there was this seven words you can't say on TV with George Carlin.
Right.
And then Cheech and Chong came out with an album.
Right.
And there was, but comedy albums, Bill Cosby, we used to sit in the basement and listen to Why Is There Air?
And
Bob Newhart's classics. And it was just a different kind of comedy.
Talk about that. You're right. It was a different kind of comedy. And I'm one of my goals and quests in life, and probably because of my age and the era I grew up in, that we both grew up in, I really am trying to bring awareness to more of a classic comedy. And I hesitate sometimes calling it clean comedy, even though that's the name of this podcast, because clean has this weird connotation, like you're going to be making balloon animals at a kid's party or something. But it's more about classic. It's creating comedy that is so well written that it doesn't need anything else to produce the laugh, you know? Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying?
Sure. No, I love the word classic. Something that has a beginning, middle, and an end. Something that makes you feel good and maybe tie a message in like the old sitcoms did. I mean, whether it's the Dick Van Dyke Show or others, even I just watched the Leave It to Beaver special, and it's like, there was just fun stuff in there.
Yeah, there was something in the country back then, in our country, I don't know about other countries, where there was just a general feeling of, I'll just call it, Christian values. Whether somebody's a Christian or not is somewhat irrelevant to this point. It was just values that were good, wholesome family values, and they would all. You're right. Those sitcoms would that message would come out, even if it wasn't blatant. You know, for the most part, the kids would obey the parents. They got into little scuffles, but it wasn't like they're going to go out and burn down a bridge or something. You know, it was a little bit more wholesome. And frankly, I'm missing that. I'm missing that in comedy in general. And I'm missing that definitely in venues, you know, like theaters or bars or whatever, where comedy is anything goes, you know. I miss that.
Yeah, the shock value, the pendulum has, there was always the edgy guys, the Lenny Bruces and some of the others that had a political edge. And there should never be a subject that we can't tackle. I don't want to be so sanitized and clean that we can't discuss issues. But that was never my purpose. But, you know, in the big picture, you know, in the late 70s, I mean, all of a sudden you had the Gong Show. And all of a sudden it was like survival for comedians. And you had 15 seconds on stage before people started to get nasty.
So were you ever on the Gong Show?
I was not, but I was in the beginning of the comedy clubs, Grandma Minnie's and a few others like that in Philadelphia.
The reason I brought that up was I was going to brag and let you know that I was on the Gong Show twice.
Oh, is that right?
I was on the original Gong Show. Yeah, first time I think we got gonged. I was with a comedy partner and it didn't go very well. And then the second time we made it through, we didn't get gonged, but we lost. We came in second place. But here's an interesting fact, Gordon. My mom, who was an amazing singer, she was actually on the Gong Show and she won. She won whatever it was, you know, $350. I forget what the prize was. It was an odd number, but that and the little gong trophy. So comedy clubs. So you were really at the beginning of that, of how that was, the clubs were beginning to take off, right?
Yeah. My buddy, Tommy Moore, he had a club in Philly, the Comedy Cabaret. There was just two or three, but a lot of them picked up on that theme of the Gong Show. You had to learn to deal with hecklers. You had to learn to deal with a tough crowd. It was tough. And people didn't come just to be entertained. It was like the game Survivor in a club. It was a whole different world.
That's so interesting. So it sounds like you're describing maybe how a movement began in those early clubs where the audience participated somewhat, maybe sometimes way overboard or whatever. And the comedian had to learn how to deal with that, how to process that, how to respond to that. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, very much. I remember one of the agents handed me a book of insults. It said, go home and memorize 50 of these. You know, you're so fat. You're so ugly. You're so bold. You know, Is that a wart on your shoulder, or is that your girlfriend? Yeah, it's like, when I went out to Hollywood back in 78, I went out to audition for a show, and I went to the comedy club, and it was just dealing with hecklers was part of the training. It was just a whole different world.
Yeah. Were you at the Comedy Store? Is that where you went?
Comedy Store. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. And, I remember back in the late 70s, I was hitting the, I forget what they call it, potluck night or something on Tuesday nights.
Rising Star.
Yeah. I never went there, but I was at Comedy Store. I was at Improv, you know, because I grew up in L.A., and I got my start in comedy actually in LA, and then took a 20 year break and got back into it in my 40s, so in Denver. Well, this is fantastic. So I mentioned there at the beginning about you also working as a pastor, and I know that you have a real heart for encouraging people and doing that through your comedy. So how do you combine fun and faith? How do you do that? I know it's possible, but how do you do it?
Yeah, people are often shocked. I don't advertise myself even often as a Christian comedian. I just advertise comedy.
Yeah.
And at the end of the program, after we've had some fun, and a lot of the comedy that is still today, my approach is like that in the 60s and 70s. It's real life stuff. It's how I met my wife. It's our first date. It's finding out that we, as a couple, that were told we couldn't have kids, and ended up doing a foster care and adoption type stuff, ended up with 14 different boys, and then God bless us with 5 miracle kids, and we talk about proms and Christmas, and so it's all real life stuff. But at the end of the show, particularly if I'm at a club or a secular event, I'll just say, oh, this might surprise you, but I also pastor a church. It always gets a laugh, like, really?
like people don't believe you. Like, oh, here comes another bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then people often say, man, I'd go to a church to hear somebody like you. Because if you're just sharing your heart and your humor is all about yourself. But yeah, we talk about having a child with special needs. I talk about, you know, 2 people that live with us were under house arrest.
Wow.
And, you know, and that is like, oh, wow, that's real life stuff. And you know, your kids aren't perfect. And, you know, you and your wife do have fights, and you're a pastor too.
I've thought about that often. I used to work in churches as the music and worship director for many years. And there was always this strange feeling or comment, like, if I was funny, well, how can you be funny and also, you know, be a Christian and work in a church? And I thought, well, why not? Why can't I do that? Is there a law somewhere that, you know, you can't, like some unwritten law, you can't be a humorous person and also minister to people and pastor a church and you know, be a Christian? It's kind of a strange disconnect because it's such an incredible gift that you have to be able to speak to people with humor, but also about real life and kind of help guide them towards a deeper truth that maybe they haven't heard about or they haven't been interested in, and now they are. I mean, I'm sure you've found things like that through your years of doing this.
Sure. Yeah. But there's a lot of neat groups that have actually done studies on brains and brain waves. And you know that music can touch your heart and touch your emotions, but they've actually found that comedy affects all 4 quadrants of your brain. So that,
wow.
You know, we use the phrase all the time that comedy breaks down walls. And all of a sudden, you know, you see a group that doesn't even know each other and they share the experience of laughter. We have a common theme, whether it's being frustrated at waiting in line at the DMV or frustrated in traffic, or you talk about an issue and all of a sudden, you know, we have something in common and we share a laughter and it builds a relationship where all of a sudden you can share something significant. And whether it's a truth from the Bible or it's just some positive experience, like half the events that I do, Dan, are fundraisers. I call it hilarity for charity.
Yeah.
And whether it's to help people go on a mission trip or to help a couple that has a child with special needs buy an electric wheelchair that go 5, 6, 7 grand or to help a family whose house burnt down and we're going to help them, you know, just get some money together. I love what I do because we're helping people come together and meet a need. And we do that with comedy. So, you know, that's to me combining the fun and the faith. The fun part it's taking a biblical principle people don't even know, and that's a merry heart works good like a medicine, and you know, the cheerful spirit, and it's just putting it into action, but then tying it into some other things of just saying, hey, we could do some good tonight.
What I love is how you are so clearly describing what I try to impress upon, particularly newbie comedians who are kind of at this, you know, less than a year, that it is actually possible to be hilarious, to be funny and all that without having to bring in any kind of the filth. You can, I mean, you're talking about real life issues, things people can relate to. They're probably elbowing each other, you know, in the audience. And you're able to do that without resorting to, I don't know, typical vulgar, filthy stuff. And it's still, it's funny. It's not a, you know, working clean is not a lesser type of comedy, and working dirty is not better necessarily. You know, I always think that any comedy, if it's not funny, I don't care if it's clean or filthy, it's not comedy if it's not funny. So you're describing your ability to learn how to craft material that touches people and then relate it to their lives where they're at, and at the same time helping people, like with this Hilarity for Charity. That's amazing. You've also written a book, right?
I have. It's about 3 years now, but it's called Growth Spurts and Growing Pains: The Struggles of a Skinny Stud Muffin.
Because you're what? You're like 7 feet tall or something, right? You're a pretty tall, thin guy.
I go about 6'3", but at one time I was 6'3", 119 pounds.
Oh, wow. I think I have a broom in the closet that would match that description.
Exactly. It sets up, and the cover of my of the book is a picture from Norman Rockwell, the 1928 edition of what he calls the bodybuilder. It's the skinniest guy you can find with a pair of gym shorts on and a little muscle man t-shirt.
Yeah.
That says so bad.
I know that. I know that painting. That's great.
Yep, and he's looking at a picture of a muscle man, Mr. Olympia. And that's the cover of my book. I got permission from them to put my face on that picture.
Oh, that's great.
And, but that really is the story of my life. I'm the skinny guy that wishes I was somebody else. If I just had the muscles and just had something else. But,
so yeah, let me ask you this. Did you ever cross that line of not worrying about that any longer? I mean, where are you now with that idea that I wish I was somebody else?
Yeah, you know, it's been a 50-year journey, but it probably about 20 years ago when I learned some of those truths of just being myself and that God loves me where I am.
Yeah, there's something about getting older that I wasn't really prepared for, and that's kind of like, whatever. You know, as I get older, it's like, okay, I guess I'll go see the doctor for that. I guess I'll take that medication. I guess I'll have to deal with this. Losing my hair, whatever it is, you know, it's just as opposed to stressing out about it.
There is that universal need. We all want to be loved and accepted. But if we think, and I found that when I first went to the CCA, that Christian Comedy Association, and I went and I'm surrounded by 40, 50, 60 amazingly gifted, talented people who sing, who act, who do impressions, who do ventriloquism. And I thought, here I am again. I'm the weakest link. I'm a skinny guy that's not good looking, and all I do is tell jokes about not going to the prom, and I can't get a date.
Yeah, and with all those that inability that you have, you're on Huckabee twice, you do a dry bar special, you're Comedian of the Year for 2023, Christian Comedian. Weren't you also the chaplain of CCA?
Yeah. From the first year, they found out I was a pastor. They asked me to pray. And next thing you know, they appointed me as chaplain. I didn't know there were no term limits.
Oh, that's pretty funny. That's great.
I've been the chaplain for 22 years.
Wow.
And so I oversee 400 bipolar unemployed comedians.
So the CCA has been around for that long? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, 2001. We were founded in 2001. Yeah.
I went to a couple of those conferences, and I think I'm still officially a member. I don't know if they send out a membership card or anything, but I've gone to a couple of those conferences, and they're good. It's great to talk with people who share my faith and who share my passion for comedy and who are doing it, you know, going out and doing it. And some are doing it more than others, or they have more opportunities than others, but we're all doing the same thing, you know, getting in front of churches or community groups or other settings, you know, cruise ships, and we're entertaining people. And that's for me, it all comes down to entertaining people. It's such an important aspect of this. I do want to talk a little bit about you're being a pastor. Maybe we've touched on this, but being a pastor, being a Christian, you know, how does that come into play to help you? Are you somebody who, I'm not sure what to even ask you, but are you somebody who prays for your material and wait to see what God brings you? Or how do you go about all that?
Well, one, I don't make fun of Jesus. People wonder about
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Or I don't even consider myself edgy, but, you know, I typically do about 100 shows a year, and I'm very, very blessed to do that. Out of that 100 shows, 30 or 40 are fundraisers, 30 or 40 are in the church, and another 30 are just secular events, whether it's a college or a club or anywhere. So my contract actually has a choice of what do you want me to do at your show? Do you want a message? Do you want prayer at the end? Is this a fundraiser? Are we appreciating somebody?
That's
Are
great.
We celebrating an event?
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of different events. And, you know, some folks in our group, you know, they do nothing but cruises. Some do nothing but clubs. Some do nothing. I kind of go anywhere that the door opens. I love working with junior, senior high groups. I speak at a high school 2-3 times a month.
Wow.
Because of my book, we kind of jumped off my book, but yeah, my book really deals with the growth spurt is 10 things that brought some love, joy, and peace into my life. Some decisions that I made, some choices that I made. So it's things that I want to share with kids who are struggling with low self-esteem, maybe suicidal thinking, some drug issues, and some of the stories of the boys we took in. The growing pains are some of the stupid things I've done.
You have to share one stupid thing you've done.
Well, one was thinking that I wasn't good enough or the CCA stuff, that curse of comparison. If I was just somebody else, if I had his looks or his brain or his gifts.
Right.
So I jokingly tell people, you may not see it out there, but I got this scar on my forehead. And right now I'm rubbing my forehead and people can't see that. And I said, I got this scar from running through doors that God hasn't opened yet. Anybody else ever do that?
Oh, wow. I love that. Yeah. I mean, it's sad, but I love that.
Yeah. And I said, I've learned to knock and wait, you know, because I always, you know, I'm a little ADD. I don't know if you can even hear that on the radio. I'm on meds right now and I'm still hyper. <It's> like,
wow. So this is you calm. What this is you calm. Yeah, and relaxed. This is you relaxed.
I was in a car accident and I'm dealing with a concussion. I'm on 6 medications and the number one side effect of all 6 medications is it makes you slow and groggy. So this is me slow and groggy.
Oh my goodness, Gordon. So if you weren't taking those, who knows where this conversation would go?
Like a 78 record.
Wow. Wow.
My wife said my sermons and my comedy shows have been better because I'm actually, people can understand me now. I'm like a machine gun.
That's great. So over your years, obviously you've done many, many, many shows. Do you have any, like, what's your best show? What's your worst show? Some of your toughest audiences? Those are great questions for comics to hear.
Yeah. Okay. Super. Well, easy for me. Choices. Anytime I will take a woman's audience over a men's audience, because statistically women laugh 7 times more than men. They're much more gracious. I've done my share of men's breakfasts and they're just torture. Men, 20 men in a basement eating pancakes is a tough group to get to.
Yeah.
But you give me 20 women, just women, just wonderful laugh. But give me a black audience over a white audience any day, because black audiences are twice as responsive. They not only laugh at everything you say, they tell the person next to them, behind them, and in front of them what you just said.
That's great. Well, it's always great to be in an audience where they obviously are there. They're hungry for comedy. That's why they've come there, as opposed to some room that suddenly at the, like in corporate events. I mean, I love those, but every so often you do a corporate event, it's like, wow. Like, you can tell these people were forced to be there. And, you know, they're just sitting at the table, you know, tapping their fingers on the table, waiting for you to be done. And it's a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I literally just did one 2 weeks ago up at Lake Placid, and it was for custodians in colleges. And the conference was to discuss the new COVID regulations for cleaners. That's a lot of C's. It's like, yeah. College custodian COVID cleaners. They had just finished a 2-hour lecture on all these cleaners that they could and couldn't use. And then I was supposed to go up and make them laugh, but they had just had a 90-minute open bar lunch.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
And,
yeah.
And they had gotten in the night before. So here's, 200 middle-aged men who had been away from home all night long, and now they're up all night, boring lecture, open bar, and then there's me.
Yeah, yeah, and you're last on the list of things, right? Yeah, I've been in those situations; those are tough.
And I tried every saver line, everything I could think of. And the next lecture was going to be on health and first aid. And I said, is the first aid guy here? Do you know CPR? Because I'm dying up here. I'm dying.
That's great. That's great. Well, we never really quite know. I mean, that's what I love about live entertainment. I've loved that since I was a kid watching my parents, is you don't know what's going to happen. And some of it you can control, with your whatever your show is, your material. Some of it you can't control. And again, that's why I like it, because it's kind of fun to be on the edge of the stage with your toes hanging over, wondering, now what? Can I save this? And sometimes you just have to walk off and thank everybody, So, Gordon, before we go, anything you got coming up you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. I get to go to Florida in a couple of weeks, work with my mentor, my friend, Mike Williams, who I think is funniest
very
guy.
Funny, very funny.
But he's a one-man circus. He does these great singing impersonations, and he designs a lot of the props for Carrot Top. He's got great prop humor, and he just does killer stand-up. So, man, he does a one-hour show that's just as good as anything out there. So
right. We'll
be doing some fundraisers in the Florida area to help support I think it's called Lighthouse Ministries down there, a drug and alcohol rehab.
That's great.
That's just a great rehab. And he also does some work in the Dominican Republic. He has a ministry down there to help feed the poor in Haiti and the Dominican. So that's coming up. I'm waiting to hear back from the Huckabee folks about having a chance to do a third encore.
Wow.
Although now that he's the ambassador to Israel, they have me on hold. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. But I was in this car accident. I was on the no driving, no flying list for a while, but I am now cleared to travel and fly. So I'm looking forward to a new year and just seeing what doors are open and just sharing the joy of the Lord everywhere I can.
Gordon, that's so great. I'm really thankful that you took the time to be with me, because I know you're a busy guy but I'm building up this podcast, and you've been a wonderful guest for me today. And I, again, appreciate all your insights. For those of you who are either new to comedy or maybe you've been doing it for a while, I hope you glean some of the insights that Gordon shared, just about trying to be relatable to people, trying to encourage people with the gift that you've been given of comedy. It's not something we should take for granted, and we shouldn't squander it. We shouldn't waste it. Find ways to write creatively and in a way that can help bring joy, as Gordon was talking about, joy to your audience, because you never know. Our jokes might be the one thing that person needed that day to maybe pull them out of a pit. No matter how shallow or deep that pit is, it pulled them out of that pit, even for the hour that we're entertaining. Gordon, thanks for being with me today. This has been a real treat, and I hope you have a great new year.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Dan.
Hey, thanks for listening today. Consider subscribing to this podcast. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Spotify and other places where fine podcasts like this are distributed. So thanks again for being with us. My name is Dan McGowan. We'll look for you next time here on Just Pure Laughs.